Social impact everywhere.
Hello, my fellow social impactors. Today we have another episode of the Social Impactors podcast. And today we have special guest Corey Blake. Now, Corey Blake is a former professional actor who excelled at telling the 30-second story, who is shifting over to the business storytelling, making that shift over a decade. He's also the founder and CEO of Roundtable and the publisher of Conscious Capitalism Press. So, Corey, I wanted to take 2 seconds right now to just really thank you for being on the show with me today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Avery.
Yeah, and I'm excited to delve into your mind a little bit because you come from so many different backgrounds that it's going to be really interesting to get your view on social impact and what that really means.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm excited to have the conversation.
So the first question I have for you then is just a little bit about you. And I want to know, you know, who you are, what you do, and why you believe you're a social impactor.
Sure. Thanks for the question. You know, I certainly haven't always been, as I think many of us haven't been, but my career did start off in Hollywood as a commercial actor. And for many years, my gifts and talents were used to encourage kids to drink soda water and stuff cheeseburgers into their faces.
Love it.
And eventually, right, had to come to terms with that reality that this is not really what I was meant to do. And had to go through a multi-year temper tantrum of realigning my life, right? During a confusing time when financially things were very fun, exciting, and a lot of free money was showing up in the mail as projects I was working on were being highly used. But I was, you know, kind of in that inner lack of alignment process. And yeah. So I think the instrumental way to kind of share that transition is to say that I'm a huge fan of a guy named Harold Klurman, who founded the Group Theater in the 1930s that eventually became Broadway and then Hollywood. And he has a quote that I paraphrase that the truth is bitter. It's like castor oil. We don't want it. It's hard to swallow. Mm. So we open their mouths with entertainment and then we pour it in. In my previous life, so to speak, in Hollywood, I was not taking responsibility for what I would pour into people when I was using entertainment to emotionally open them up. And so this, you know, second half of my career, the founding of Roundtable, being a business storyteller, has centered all around owning that responsibility that once we do have people in a space where their hearts and souls are opened, we are filling it with things that will improve the planet.
Let's talk a little bit about that shift. I'm curious. So when you went from, you know, this, a lot of, like you said, a lot of free money, you were in the acting world to a much more impactful lens, what was that couple years? You called it a temper tantrum. What was that like?
Yeah, no, I call it my 3-year temper tantrum. You know, when I left acting, I had been producing and directing, but I was still kind of all associated with Hollywood. And I was getting married and my wife, we thought was going to come out to LA. And after we got married, she really recognized her identity was tied to her work in Chicago. And mine had become more flexible. So I went back to the place where I had grown up, which to me was necessary because my identity as a husband didn't make sense when I was apart from her. And yet I did not know who I was for several years because if I wasn't an actor, I had no sense of identity. And so I was kind of in that limbo space. I had started RTC. It was 2005 when I started the company, but I wasn't identifying as a business person. That didn't make sense to me. It was just something I was doing. And I would say it was a confusing, painful in-between period. Yeah. Eventually, my wife, thankfully, really pushed me into therapy to start talking to somebody and figure out how to kind of unpack the experience. And I went back. Here's a good way to sum it up. I went back to LA about a year after I had left to an industry party I got invited to. And I love this moment. I share this story probably way too often. But I'm in a room of all these people that I used to know. And there is a 12-piece mariachi band, and I swear to God, I was the only person who even knew they were there because everyone else was so swept up in the typical Hollywood, what's my next deal, got to kind of, you know, create bravado. And it's just a thing that I got caught up in while I was there, and going back and seeing it and seeing that I was out of it, I felt like I got lucky.
Wow. That is super powerful because I can think back to experiences that I had where I was in I was a lot more in the traditional business realm for a while. And, you know, it's fun because it's a lot about relationships and capacity building, but I got out of it and got really into the social impact world and into, you know, impact investing and generally just being a good human. And what I realized going back into it was that just the things you don't notice, right? Those things that you don't notice that that kill the human spirit. And maybe that's a, you know, a drastic way to say it, but going back into it, I really saw those things. And it was difficult for me to come to terms with too.
I really appreciate you're highlighting for me that that the issue was me. It wasn't LA. I mean, I was changed by the environment, but it was relationships became super important to me when I switched over to business. But actually there, I was so ego-driven out of fear, the desire to, you know, to have the perception of success, to get the opportunities I thought I needed in order to build, you know, my platform, et cetera. Those were actually disconnected in their tissue because I lost my sense of humanity by being so ego driven. But I'm appreciative that you're highlighting that that my transition over to the business world created that opportunity for me.
Yeah, and I mean, you're at a better place now because I can even tell when you talk about it. Just, you know, seeing you right now, you smile, right? And that is a very subconscious trait. Sometimes you do it consciously, but generally when you're talking, you're wrapped up in the conversation, not how you react. And when you smile, that's a good sign.
I can laugh. I have a good sense of humor about where I've been. And I recognize I have plenty of friends who are still there who could navigate it way better than I could, didn't lose themselves in that process and were able to apply it in a more healthy way. I just wasn't, man. I got eaten up by it.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. You find out a little bit about yourself, but no, thank you for telling me that story. That's a good story. I like it. And this is a good question then, because it kind of transitions with that experience and it goes into more about the community. And so the question I have for you is, how are you now making a positive impact in your community?
So when my wife and I moved back to Chicago, I actually did not extend my roots very deeply because I didn't feel like part of that community. My community, I joke around that I get on planes and fly to Texas 5 times as frequently as I drive 10 miles into the city of Chicago. So my community is not necessarily right where I'm located. We don't have a super deep community where we are. I do a lot of traveling, but my community is oftentimes people in the conscious capitalism movement, people who are part of the Stegan Leadership Academy that I'm highly involved in. There's a number of groups, small giants that I'm involved in, social venture network that's become social venture circle. I've got a tremendous number of friends in there and I've been a part of that community for a long time. So all of that I consider my community. And I think my place in all of this, I tend to be a stand for wholeness, right? We're all on that journey to creating more dimensionality in our world, to expressing ourselves more fully so that we can show up with more, what I term as actual power, right? Like the more whole that I am in the work that I do, the more impact that I can have. And so I'm oftentimes in that space of supporting people who are recognizing aspects of themselves that need to be reintegrated or honoring maybe a shadow side to their superpower. That by knowing and being authentic and honest about, they can leverage to create more choice and more awareness, right? So I'm a stand for transformation for folks, helping them to own more, live more fully within their work so that the impact that they have is exponentially greater.
You said two really interesting things there that I want to delve into more. One was conscious capitalism. Would love to get your opinion on that. And then the second one was you talked about people's superhero traits, right? Who they are. Sure. And I don't remember the expression you used exactly, but I want to delve into those two things more. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's do it. So let's go conscious capitalism first.
Okay. So I had my first intersection with conscious capitalism in 2014. One of my clients was the owner of a fast casual restaurant with several hundred locations, really interesting, fascinating, big brand guy. And he one day he just said to me, you need to go to this next Conscious Capitalism CEO Summit. He said, don't ask any questions, just pay the fee and go. And he had been teaching me this principle he calls the yellow brick road, which I interpret as when someone that I care about and respect tells me I should do something, I should do my best to shut up and try and do it.
Yeah.
And so I went to this CEO summit and had you know, the initial experience I think a lot of people have when they go into a new space like that of what the heck am I doing here? Who am I to be here with these folks? And then by the end of that, I had this incredibly strong desire to be of service to that community. And I have made sense of it in that I think so many of those folks have invested incredibly heavily in their intellectual capacity. Mm-hmm. MBAs, right? Lots of business, a business lifestyle, ability to drive results and create impact. And here I was coming into this space with a theater degree, a guy who had, you know, worked in LA as a storyteller, as an actor, and then eventually who kind of fell into business without expecting it. It wasn't part of my strategy. So I had been, you know, aware of my own embodied experience. I was a dance minor. So I have capacity in ways, and I've invested in capacity that is different from what a lot of these folks in the conscious capitalism space possessed. Both are really valuable, right? But in the conscious capitalism spectrum, both are necessary. So I felt this incredible desire to serve the community and support people on the consciousness portion of their journey, while I also, you know, wanted to be there to learn from the capitalism side that came more intuitively to some other folks. Ultimately, the movement on the whole, I think, is a stand for doing well by doing good, right? Ensuring that we're not totally profit line driven, the stakeholder orientation, everyone in a business relationship ideally is winning, right? Those kinds of mentalities. And I'm really taken, of course, with conscious leadership and conscious culture. What does it mean? What does it require of us? Because it is incredibly complex and not easy to attain, right? There's so much to learn in order to do it well.
Yeah, no, I mean, the conscious capitalism movement for me is just, we kind of talked about this, just being a good human, but it's also being much more aware of, you know, our actions and those outcomes, those results that happen. And I think that, you know, social impact and social driven businesses are exactly what that is, right? You have to look at the holistic success of anything. It's never one-sided. Everything's complex, and that's the issue, right? It requires so much thought and so much reflection in those situations that it can be difficult to do. But once you do it, the results are always better. They always are.
I love that. I mean, the question of what does it mean to even be good, right? I mean, if we pull an audience and ask which of the half of you are on the less good side, like nobody knows. No. No, they're probably not admitting it, right? Yeah. Like, you know, we all I think come with good intentions, and reality is that a lot of our behavior is not in support of what we might want to be in the world. That's just a human condition. Right. So in many ways, I think conscious capitalism is putting into the forefront the conversation that this is a lifestyle education, constant investment to improve ourselves so that we can improve our businesses and the lives of the people that are impacted.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's exactly it. And it's always a continuous process, right? We live in this systemic, this traditional system that really is based off of one outcome. It's based off of a profit, right? It's based out of one shade of what you should be doing. And so you're working in an existing system that understands one aspect of it while trying to do different aspects. So it's that continuous process of just becoming a little bit better every day. And I mean, that's all we can really do. We get better every day and just realize that we have to.
I appreciate, right? It's the combination between intention and surrender.
Yeah.
Right. There's only so much we can do. We have to tend to family. We have to take care of ourselves and our own humanity while we're also being as cognizant as we can about the decisions that we're making within the context of the business. I find that polarity between intention and surrender to be just fascinating and complex. And I certainly wish it was easier for me to be comfortable with surrendering more frequently, because I actually think it creates more opportunity.
Yeah, that's a difficult one for me too. It's hard. It's really hard. So let's go into the second point then. I want to know more about what you meant by, you know, people's superhero traits or being a superhero. What do you mean?
So based on the kind of work that we do, you know, a big portion of our work is supporting people in writing the book that they're born to write. But we do a lot of transformational organizational storytelling, like, if we revise the stories, we get different behaviors and then we get different results, right? All of that, that process has taught me that if we investigate into our origin story moments, that are originated from pain. That's where we find these superpowers are born. All right. So as an example, when I was 5 years old, the first 5 years of my life, my mother, well, I have a Jewish mom. So I got all of her light and all of her love and all of her energy. And I thought I was here. I was the only thing that mattered. The universe literally, you know, moved around me in my five-year-old mind. And I was here to do something special. I was special. Right. And that period from 5 to 6, my mom was struck with really severe depression and what we would now call bipolar disorder. Very human thing to go through. And at the end of that year, she was on the right medication and her light turned back on as bright as ever. So on both ends of that year of my life, like all that light is being poured into me, built my confidence, right? I'm somebody who will speak up and, you know, voice things. But that year was the birth of my gift, because the person who had been the safest in my life became the most dangerous and the most volatile. So I had to learn how to read the energy of a room to know if I was safe as a kid. I didn't know what I was doing, right? But I'm reading my dad, I'm reading my sister, I'm feeling the energy of the house in these very weird intuitive ways. You know, what is the sound of my mom's footsteps around the house tell me so much, right? So I'm learning to pay attention to all these things. And I also had to learn the difference between the language we use, everything's fine, sweetheart, and right, reality through behavior, things are really messed up right now.
Yeah.
Those two things became this gift in combination with, I learned that the house was happier. Mom was happier when I was funny, when I was a performer.
Okay.
So that was right. A lot of us who are performers, I think, have a similar kind of birthing moment, right? Like we use it as a strategy. It's a survival technique. So all of us in life creates these survival strategies. They become superpowers because when they work in one area, we have this natural human tendency to apply them in other places. And we find that they work in other places, not every place, but in lots. And I think what tends to happen over time is we come to this belief that they work in all situations, which is of course not true. And that becomes, right, so eventually we have an opportunity to look at what's the shadow side of my superpower. My superpower is that I can help, I know how to help people feel special. My mom did that for me. It's very intuitive for me. I can find what is beautiful about another human being. Where I have to be careful is that there's a shadow side to that, which is that if I have a desire or a want, I can use that in a manipulative way without realizing I'm even doing it. Right? If it's my default for all situations, there are times when it gets used in ways that are damaging to relationships. So all of us have these kinds of survival mechanisms that we've developed. In Gestalt theory that I'm a big fan of, we call it a creative adaptation. How did we adapt to life creatively? It's a power, and we don't want it to go away, right? For the right job, it is a brilliant talent and tool that we can use, but we also have to be really careful and make sure we're learning how to flex other muscles so that we have choice, and that way we use the appropriate tool for the appropriate situation. So huge fan of the superpower talk and or the conversation around that and the recognition of the importance of recognizing the shadow side of that. Organizationally, it exists also. It's born from the cumulative superpowers of the people who have come together. There are shadow sides all over the place. Organizationally, the more that we can pay attention to those, the more impact that we can have by being authentic, right? And not being driven by these forces that we're not even realizing we're driven by.
I love that. No, that's, I've never heard the expression, your shadow side, but it's so true, because if you don't have balance in what your strengths or your superpowers are, anything that's used too often is bad. That's just, you know, a basis of balance in the world and basis of balance in yourself. And I remember many times, I'm a little bit of an empath, right? I can feel emotion quite well. And like you, I can read a room, but it's very easy for me to know how to diffuse situations. Now that can also come in dangerous. It can be dangerous for me because sometimes I'll overuse that, right? And I drain myself immediately, right? And it's not good to drain yourself because then it takes me 4 days to recover. So there's, there's two sides to it, right?
Absolutely. And I think both of us, any superpower can be used to rescue people. Well, as soon as we rescue people, we make ourselves the hero and that makes them the victim.
Yeah.
The positioning of it is just, it's touchy and it can be very disempowering to people, right? So we may have the best of intentions, and this is the greatest thing I've ever learned, I think, around the whole superhero power kind of conversation, that intentions can become irrelevant when behavior sucks.
Yeah, no, it's
and
true.
And I certainly have had great intention in life and had really crappy behavior.
Sometimes I've had the best intentions too, and the situations never go the way you want. And that's a sign, right? That's a sign that it just, that wasn't meant to be, and you learn from it.
Oftentimes for me, it's been a blind spot. Like literally did not realize that I was using, you know, this talent in a way that was manipulative or unwilling, I think incapable of owning that. Right? Like, cause that wouldn't make sense. That doesn't cast me in the identity that I know of myself.
Yeah.
Believing that. So I would stick to intention is everything. Well, it took me a while to learn and a couple busted companies before the one that finally worked.
Yeah.
That sometimes I can have the greatest of intentions. I can do 1,000 things so well, and I can explode all of the trust I've earned with a single really horrible decision.
Yeah. And that's a hard thing to deal with, right? Because that's complete vulnerability. That's accepting that there's, you know, it's not a flaw at all, but it's accepting that there is something that is not always good. That might feel the best in the situation to do or act, right?
It's been, those lessons have been the most painful for sure. And the most important for me to learn.
Yeah. 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 No, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, one of the hardest times that I've had, and you know, I'm quite young, but one of the hardest times I had in my life was the aftermath of being too empathetic. The aftermath of being too much of an empath in a situation that just left me defeated. And it took me about a month to recover from it. I realized that there was no barriers that were set up, right? I was using that gift too much, that I had asked too much of myself. And it was in that month of pain that I realized this. And I think I've come out a little bit better and more aware of those actions, right? I tend to listen to them, but then I tend to think, is it right for the situation, right? Is it right for me to use my empath skill? Or is it right of me just to leave, right? Sometimes it's just good to do an opposite of what you normally would do.
Oh, so hard.
No, it's true.
But absolutely.
It's not easy. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I practice making those decisions. I did it just the other day at an event where the host of the event was cleaning some dishes after a meal. And I intentionally didn't go over and help. And I was like, that's not me. That's not the version of me that I know. I'm not the person who doesn't help, right? Like, and yet I'm being intentional about expanding my choice and seeing how it feels like just experimenting with that stuff. It's most of us, I think, for most of my life, I've been on a somewhat of a default by patterns of life and what they've created in me. And so this is just an opportunity to be intentional about shifting some of that. It's not intuitive or easy or comfortable at all.
No, everything that's uncomfortable is good though. It is. It leads to something good if you use it well. And again, I don't know. Maybe that's wrong. We're learning.
Well, it's a fascinating point because I notice, and I'm sure this is obvious, but as human beings, we have this desire to save those we love from pain, even though we know that pain has defined the things we now like probably most about ourselves in many ways. Certainly not across the board as a blanket statement.
Yeah.
But if we can acknowledge that our superpowers are born from pain, why are we trying to prevent people from claiming their superpower? But it's a natural human thing. We don't want other people to feel pain.
Well, and that's true. And you think about, you know, the most successful, you know, let's say entrepreneurs, just because that's the space that I'm in. The most successful ones have gone through immense amount of pains, right? Failed aspects of their lives, but yet we you know, want to embody these traits. Well, the only reason they got those traits and that success was because of that sacrifice and pain in the beginning. It's true. I've never thought of it that way. We don't embrace that one side, the pain aspect that builds towards these superhero tricks. We don't do that.
Not typically. I know a few people who play in that zone with intention, and I find them to be utterly fascinating.
Yeah. Those are the people you want to be around.
sometimes it just intimidates the heck out of me to the degree with which I see it. Like I know a woman who's part of the Young Entrepreneur Council that I'm a part of, who puts herself constantly in these really uncomfortable situations. That teacher, like the other day, she's terrified of bees, and like she went and worked at a bee colony or something like that. She does that like week after week, and she's been doing it for years.
Yeah.
And I can only, I'm absolutely fascinated. Her dedication to it is phenomenal. And wow, I mean, it just strikes me as an amount of discomfort that I'm maybe just not comfortable with, not okay with.
I can't do it either. There's a certain degree that I'm uncomfortable, and then that's where I draw a line. Some people can do it, but you know, hey, good for those people.
Awesome. I love watching. I love being a witness.
Yeah, yeah. So let's jump into the third question. And this question is more about business. So I want to delve into, you know, you talked about you had a couple failed businesses before, which is a huge part of learning as an entrepreneur. But on the basis or the umbrella of business, do you believe social impact is an important part of it?
Well, I'm a people person by nature, right? So I think those of us who are people, there's no way for a business to not have a social impact component. It is human beings who make up the configuration of what a business does and what it tries to achieve.
Yeah.
I think certainly there are plenty of people, like if you're not people-centric in your thinking, then it might be easy to disregard the human component of that conversation and that structure. For me, it's almost all that matters. It's almost out of balance too much probably. So I would say for some of us, like myself, it is kind of the only way to be. And there's just this natural, you know, recognizing the humanity of the people is inherent to the system. Now, it's not to say that it's always easy for me, right? Like I am also an entrepreneur and a business owner, which, you know, means that I have certain tendencies, right? So if things aren't getting done or if I'm not getting results that I like, my initial inclination, my default is blame, right? So that's something that I have to work against. And one of the ways that I work against that is knowing the human circumstances of the people who are on my teams. So our leadership team at RTC, for example, we do a lot of work to understand what's everyone carrying around in that emotional backpack based on life circumstances.
Yeah.
It is not unusual for me to hear about companies where the leadership team, 50% of them has been divorced in the last year and none of them know that, right? Like they've eliminated the human component or kept distance, like this feeling like that doesn't belong in the business workplace. So if we strip the human component out, then maybe we can get away with believing it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Right? But ultimately, I think at the end of the day, the more that we know the humanity of the people that are part of the system, the more we take care of each other and the more compassionate, empathetic, intentional we are about how that carries out into the rest of the world to ensure that we are doing good at the same time that we're trying to grow this thing together.
I mean, I just had an entire conversation at, I work in an entrepreneurship hub. It's a social innovation hub, but I had an entire conversation with a colleague about how you can't remove the human element from business. The expression, you know, it's just business. Oh my God. It boils my blood because it's not, that is a way for people to get away from the human element, right? It's a complete withdrawal from humanity because every decision you make is a human decision. It's an emotional decision or emotional response. And if the companies that are the best run, the companies that do the best in the long term, not short term, but the long term, are companies that have the human element in, right? Companies that care about their employees, companies that leadership aren't afraid to let employees lead sometimes. Those are the companies that do the best. And like you had talked about, I believe it's the human element that leads it. I think that's why they do so well.
I think it's a really interesting question because I think there are plenty of studies that demonstrate exactly what you said, that those companies do well. And yet I think we hear every day about companies that seem to treat their people rather horribly, and they're big companies. So they've created a certain amount of some kind of success. Mm-hmm. Right. And we all define that differently. So it exists and it confounds me. It truly does confound me to hear that that cultures that seem to dehumanize, right, at the same time have somehow become built to a scale where there are tens of thousands of employees who are part of that system.
Yeah.
I find that really challenging to acknowledge and personally rather heartbreaking. I know like a lot of us who are in this space, social impact, conscious capitalism, we group together, right? Because it's someone, because we find other places in those spaces, other people in those places where we can feel like we can relate to one another. Because oftentimes for me, like the reason that I told you, I don't have deep roots in my community. Mm-hmm. I don't find commonality with a lot of those folks in my community who, when I go to a social gathering, most of what I hear about is how much people can't stand their job.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me because it's not a world that I live in, right? There's this huge gap, but it is the way that the majority of people in this country, at least, are living. in a job that is a means to an end. It's not a place where they get to exhibit their purpose or their passion or feel like they're contributing to the world. It's just something that is supporting a certain lifestyle or allowing them, you know, to do certain things outside of that context that fulfill them. But that to me is a really sad lost opportunity.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, it's the same in Canada as well. You know, it's hard. There's a lot of people that are, you know, living in, I think it's a North American trait, but it's a North American lifestyle per se. But I think those businesses that, you know, are these large 10, 20,000 employees that have this dehumanizing element, I really think that they've built that system because of traditional rules and systems that were in place, right? For the longest time, that idea that, you know, business is business existed. That was how business was done. And I mean, we had one element of profit that, you know, led to an entire revolution, you know, of industrialization and led us to this way. But it also, without us knowing, led us to destroy our planet, led us to destroy the environment that we live in, disconnected humans more than ever before with technology, right? We missed those elements. So I think it was because we were really one-shaded. I mean, this is just my personal opinion, but we really looked at the world in one lens, which was we need these things that build us into a monetary success. And that's how we defined success as a whole. And now we're finally realizing as human species, as people, that just isn't true, right? We have, you know, ways to connect, but we're more disconnected than ever before. We have ways to build environment up, but we still don't. Right.
I think the challenge is not vilifying profit, because profit does help power, right? All these other things that we want to do. And there is sometimes a desire to make that thing bad and swing over the pendulum, you know, too far in the other direction. I think in many ways, the Me Too movement, in many ways, that's one of the outcomes is there's a lot of talk about everything that's wonderful about being a woman and horrible about being a man. And there are plenty of things that are represented on both sides of that. Ideally, right, getting to a place where we are focused on what are the upsides of both and creating systems, right, that celebrate that. Similarly, with profitability and impact, right, creating some kind of virtuous cycle where we're getting the best from both with as little of the downside as possible. Not easy.
No, not at all. Complex. It's very complex.
Yeah,
I could see you processing that.
What else do you say?
it's true. But it makes me happy seeing these movements that exist, right? Like conscious capital, talking about, you know, social impact and just impact investing. These movements are bringing human elements back into business realms.
Yeah, I don't know how fast we're doing it. I have a little bit of bias because most of my circles now are in these spaces, so it feels like so many of us are. I don't know the reality, but certainly we're constantly seeing ripple impact. I think there's a lot to feel good about as we continue to strive for more.
Yeah. And I mean, I can give you an example of how I think it's just blown my mind how people are using impact related things or social impact to better the world. There's a gentleman that I interviewed, and he runs a business in Ghana. And what he does is he basically sponsors students that are the highest in their grade, and he sponsors them by paying their entire university. And what he does is he takes a small percentage at the end of it when they get a job, but he basically pays for their entire schooling. He pays for them a monthly rent and basically a stipend for their food. So they have no expenses during this time. So they can really focus on their academics. And then at the end of it, they get a small percentage, but he's just brought those people to, you know, the potential of not getting to the place they want to giving them the opportunities to, right? And this is across the world. And he's from North America, right? So these things are happening. And that's very, very different because he's bringing better returns for his investors while also bringing the human element into helping someone, right? He's helping them by leading them, but not controlling their destiny. And I think that's fascinating.
I do too. I appreciate also that it's playing the long game, right? It's not an immediate return on investment. You got to put someone through their education and get them onto an earning track before there's a return at all. And education is rather expensive. So that's a wonderful long-term view.
Yeah. And I mean, those things are happening more and more, but I think I'm also a little bit biased. So let's jump into the last question. And the last question is about your advice. And so what is your advice, or rather, what is that advice for other people, maybe the viewers here, maybe your community, whoever, you know, you interact with, What's your advice for them to begin making a positive impact in their communities?
I'm a firm believer that it does start with the self, and personal development is a lifestyle choice. So I'm somebody who I'm not internally motivated in the same ways that I might be externally motivated. So to like difference between like, I won't go to the gym and work out myself, but if I have a trainer and I have an appointment to make, I will show up and I will give it my all during that time. If I'm directed, like I'm a great actor when there's a good director.
Right? Yeah.
So I treat learning the same way, which means I always have to be in a program. If I'm in a program, I will show up, I will do the work, I will get the value, right? I'll improve myself. So I'm a believer in figuring out what that is for yourself. Some people can be really self-motivated. Other people need my kind of trajectory, whatever that is for you, ensuring that you are making some kind of serious commitment on a yearly basis, year to year. Like, what am I doing that as long as I show up, I am guaranteed to grow in my capacity as a human being? All of that ripples and flows into the work that we do together. And particularly for people who are leading other people, that kind of example carries over into everything, inspires other people to be on a similar path. If you can then even invest in or support your, you know, your other leadership team members in being part of that kind of work for themselves, then you create a culture where that becomes the norm. And that just increases the potential for what y'all do together. So I'm a huge fan of it. We do it at our company. I do as much as I can, probably sometimes overcommit, but I've been on that path for many years now. And I think I can see the correlation between the business growth and my individual growth. And it's easy to see that I'm ultimately the thing that holds it back the most.
Well, and that's, no, I love that. I love that. That is, it's so true that we tend to forget that the correlation to, you know, external success, or let's say business success, really is the success in which we have growing ourselves, right? You know, for myself, I really had to grow in and understand those other shades of myself, right? So I had, you know, one strength, which was being very empathetic and reading situations, but I also have many other strengths that I had no idea existed. And only once I started embracing those and really taking time to reflect and understand those, did I really start to see growth in my business. Mm. And it was because of that, right? It was because I invested time in myself. And maybe this is just personally, but I want your view on it. Do you find a lot of times that people miss that correlation, not necessarily because they don't see it, but it's not always talked about, right? That correlation of personal development or personal success leading to other successes in life.
I think the natural trajectory is it becomes a question typically when we hit 40. Like, it's an age thing for a lot of people. I see most of the folks that I know that are in their 20s and 30s, as I was at the time, are very achievement oriented. I like to get things done. I like to move fast. I like to hit the goals and create that form of success. And then, like, on the nosy, when I hit 40, I started asking a different kind of question around much more around meaning than around how I was defining success before. And I think that's the traditional trajectory, and bless anybody who can start asking those questions earlier. They just really weren't on my radar until that time of life, like I said, which I think is typical. But for anyone who can ask those questions at an earlier age and really start to learn how to wrestle with those, to learn how to do, like, I'm a fan of what, you know, you mentioned the shadow aspect, shadow work, like really understanding the things that hold us back, our blind spots, the ways in which we might behave that are sabotaging our intentions without us realizing it. The more that we expand that range of awareness and even understand the stories behind those behaviors, it has been this amazing unfolding of new potential ways of being. I can be a much more loving human being with myself first and then therefore outwardly with others when I do that work and don't do it from a place of judgment or needing to fix anything, but just doing it from a place of compassionate understanding, right? To look at that tendency I might have to unconsciously manipulate because I have the ability to, you know, to play in that space. To be able to look at that with kindness allows me to be less avoidant when it's showing up and look at it from that place of, oh, there's that thing I do, as opposed to, oh God, I hope no one sees what I'm doing because it's dangerous and I need to hide it and pretend it doesn't exist. And then I'm acting all weird and like, right. Yeah. So that kind of work I think is absolutely profound. And when, as a business, we can do it to some degree together, which is something that our business actually practices. How do we do that shadow work together so that we can hold each other to the higher versions of ourselves? That stuff businesses don't typically engage in. And I find it to be absolutely fascinating and a genuine opportunity to support people in becoming more whole, more kind to themselves, right? And then, of course, more kind outwardly in the work that we're doing together.
You talked about the advice of what to do, but how do they start that? How does a person start to begin looking at, you know, their shadow work? Or how do they start to realize that, you know, oh, this might, you know, I need to learn more about myself. How?
You mentioned the discomfort piece, like things that are uncomfortable are good, right?
Yeah.
So I think that can be dead on. You said all the time, and I
yeah. That's true.
I love that you said it. I had that resistance too, but I was like, no, it's probably true.
Even yeah.
It'd be hard to rationalize, and yet whatever. But all I can say is I can share a little bit of my trajectory in just a few sentences here. The first time that I did something like this was with Michael Gerber, who's the author of The E-Myth. He was putting on this small intimate event called In the Dreaming Room. Mm. And it was a $3,000 cost. And at that time, our business was much smaller. Spending that on my own personal development was very hard to make sense of, right? It was irrational. And yet I felt like I was supposed to do it. And I felt moved to take myself out of my comfort zone. And that experience was the first in kind of unlocking an awareness around the power of writing big checks and then showing up. Mm. So today, like, you know, I'm a part of I mentioned the Stegan Leadership Academy, and that's a place where I do a fair amount of studying. It's a much higher price tag to do that kind of personal development work. It's catered to CEOs and presidents. It's a lot of personalized attention in a really serious environment that also has a spiritual component to it. I've done a bunch of studying at the Gestalt Institute of Cleveland, which is less pricey. It's not CEO kind of pricey, but it's more than in the dreaming room and putting myself in an 18-month program, you know, where I went and did that and, you know, with travel and whatnot, it's not cheap, et cetera. So for me, it's not necessarily what the program is, because there are lots of programs like this, but it is the willingness to invest in myself and consider it an investment, not an expense, right? To the framing of it, I think is really important. Playing the long game in your own personal development.
Yeah.
Finding a few things that are highly recommended. I often do it, follow the yellow brick road, that lesson that I learned from that other CEO, finding what other people are doing, right? And taking a step and being courageous, doing the thing that seems unreasonable. Right. Landmark's a great entry point for some people. Like I did Landmark. I did that initial Landmark Forum weekend. It was very pivotal for me. My dad ended up going to it and it changed his life. Other people I know really resist Landmark. So there are other opportunities, but finding something that you want to dive into and then trying to figure out habitually, how do I put myself into an uncomfortable situation where I am at the bottom of the learning ladder yet again?
Yeah.
Year after year. Suddenly it's a lifestyle and you're in constant, you know, expansion mode.
Yeah. And that's not always easy. As much as, you know, I talk about this uncomfortability, it's not always easy. And I think that's the beautiful thing about it is that it's a constant reminder that there's always something to learn, right? The uncomfortability, if you really open that up, if you open up the envelope with it, it really is that I have no awareness of this, right? I don't know what this is. And that's the biggest amount of learning you can do is when you don't know anything at all.
Yeah. And I think it's important to gauge our discomfort, right? Like I don't think it's important to put ourselves in such an uncomfortable position that we can't function. The goal, no. I think, is to be able to feel ourselves pressed against our limit and then push a bit further and be into programs that will help us do that, as opposed to break us into a million pieces that take 10 years to put back together.
Yeah, I don't mean go, you know, to a conference that might make you cry. I mean, like,
hey, just, crying is fine. Crying is, there's, I think crying is good. Crying.
No,
is good.
It is, but you never want to go too uncomfortable. That is true. There is always a limit, and that's that self-discovery piece, right? You have to realize what that limit really is.
I love that. I've learned something I've learned in the past few years that really sticks out to me as you say that, is that oftentimes the edge of my discomfort in my mind is really big, or is really close up maybe to my face. Mm. But when I press up against it through an experience, when I don't know how safe the room is, or I feel like it's unsafe, so I test it by putting out something I could be judged for, that's when I find out really how safe it is. And it may be way safer than I ever could have imagined. And then I get to do some really serious work, or it may blow up. And then I realize, okay, I got to be careful here.
Yeah.
Right. But only when I press up against that, do I find where it really exists? Cause in my head, it's a different reality.
Well, and that's that hard part, right? Yeah. It's all about learning, and you have to test, you have to do that. Action part is severely important. Yeah.
Without it, you don't know.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. Corey, I just wanted to say, you know, thank you for taking time today to be on the podcast. That's all the questions I have, but I want you to leave, you know, one remark from you, or just something that you can say that will connect people with you. What's the best place to find you? What's the best place to learn about Corey Blake and everything that you've done, and maybe about your books too? Where can viewers find that?
People can find us at roundtablecompanies.com. If something that I've shared is resonating, we've got an offer at roundtablecompanies.com/purpose. It's a 30-minute guided meditation that I love delivering that leads people, kind of avoids the intellect approach to what am I here to do in this world, and creates this experience where people find it without realizing what they're doing until they've found it. And I would love for people to have access to that. So they can find that there, consciouscapitalism.org, and Conscious Capitalism Press can be found there for people who are interested.
That's amazing. I'm going to link that in the body of this as well, and okay, in the comments, so people can find it. And okay, I just want to say one last time, you know, thanks for being on the show, man.
It's a pleasure, Avery. Thanks for having me. This was really fun.